evening, everyone. This is Dolores Cannon with the Metaphysical Hour. We're live tonight. This is May the 2nd, 2014. And it's just me tonight. It's just me sitting here staring at the wall. And I know you've told me before when I said, oh, I don't know if anybody's listening because I feel I'm just talking to the wall. And I've had many people write in and they say, oh, we're listening. We just don't want to talk. We just want to listen. Because they said, we're all over the world and we're listening. But to me, I'm just sitting in here with a room with the telephone, staring at the wall. Anyway, I just got back from London. That's why I wasn't here last week. And before we get going, I better give out the toll-free number. The toll-free number, in case anyone wants to call in, is 1-888-627-6008. 1-888-627-6008. And we were in London. We were only gone about 4 days. And I came back, and Julia stayed over there. That's why she's not here tonight with me. I really like it when she's here because she adds a lot to the program. She has things that she comments on, and she always gets, what you want to call it, messages, intuitions that add to the program. So I miss it when she's not here to back me up. But we have an office in England, in Glastonbury, and so she had to stay over there and take care of some business there in England. So I came on back by myself. But we had to go to London. There was a concert. It was called the Save the Oceans concert. It involved with saving the ocean and the dolphins and the whales. And we specifically had to go for that because we are one of the sponsors who helped putting it on. And it really turned out very well. They had the Royal Philharmonic Orchestra there, and it was beautiful. It was in the theater. And they had a lot of different musicians that took turns playing with the orchestra. And I think it was highly successful. But we had to go because we were sponsoring it. And it was a good charity organization, you know, that the money was going to the charity. So after that, then I had to do a talk. They always say, as long as you're over here, why don't you do a talk? So I don't get out of just going on a trip and coming home. I always have to do it to work, too. I've got to do a talk. So I did a talk. It was in a church in London called Union Chapel. But if you're familiar with England, especially London, is a lot of these churches are so old. They go way, way back. You know, I know the cathedrals are ancient, but the churches are also. And this is one of those huge churches with the big dome inside. And they're always the feeling of being old, old, ancient. That's the kind of energy you get when you walk into them. And sometimes it can be a bit creepy. I know I spoke at one in when I was in Scotland that we went up and it was going to be at night, and there was the outside of the building was all these gargoyles. You know, those are those statues on the outside looking down on you as you came into the church. And it was a very creepy and uneasy feeling. So some of these places I go to have a strange energy. One time in Scotland, too, I spoke in a courthouse, and it was at night. Don't ask me why these things are in these places. I don't set them up. Somebody else does, and I just go and do what I'm supposed to do, and I never know where it's going to be or who's going to show up or what organization or anything. And it was in a courtroom of an ancient, ancient courthouse in Scotland, and talk about strange vibrations and energy in a place like that. You could feel it coming out of the wall. But you can imagine in a courtroom how much emotions would have been there over hundreds of years. So I think the energy of a place accumulates from what happens in that place. And it accumulates and affects anybody else who walks in. And when we came in, even before we started, there was a woman who was the caretaker of the courthouse, and she said, "Please don't anybody leave before me." She said, "I want to leave at the same time you do. I don't like to be here alone at night." And she said, "Can't you feel there's something here?" And all I knew was it felt old and a strange energy. But she said when she would be there at night, she'd hear all kinds of things in the courthouse. And it scared her. So she said, "Make sure that I leave when you leave. I don't want to like to be in here by myself at night." But all I know is that courtroom, it was extremely dark, too. But some of these places I've had to speak in are very kind of weird and kind of creepy. But I think that's what it is. It's the energy of the place. It absorbs the energy of whatever has happened in those places. You know, a lot of that has to do with what I found to be the elemental energy. And an elemental energy is the basic energy. It has no intelligence. It hasn't formed into anything yet. It just exists. And it is attracted to emotion. So many times, it will exist in places. So that's what I say. If you've ever walked into a beautiful cathedral and felt this wonderful, beautiful feeling, that's an elemental energy. And if you walk into a jail, you feel a negative energy. But that is an elemental energy that accumulates around the place. And it takes on the emotions of what has happened there. So you people can feel these things. A lot of people talk about they feel it in their houses, too. Oh, if you're living in a house or bought a house that is old and had a lot of things happen, I think it does accumulate energy from the events that have happened there. It doesn't have to be ghosts. It is just an elemental energy that influences the place. And I've had a lot of cases where we have run into things like that. But it is just a basic energy that it cannot harm anyone. It's just attracted to emotions. And that's why it accumulates around certain places. But anyway, I had to speak in this church in London, and it was that kind of a feeling, just old and ancient. But then I came back, and Julia stayed over there. She's going to be back in a couple of weeks because we're going to be focusing on our transformation conference that's coming up. You know, we just finished the UFO conference. And now we're going to our transformation conference. This is our 9th year to put in on. And it's like I didn't need anything else when I inherited the UFO conference last year. Got so much going on in my life. But the transformation conference I started 9 years ago to focus on our authors. We have over 50 other authors besides myself that we publish. And a lot of these people have never spoken anywhere, and they don't know how to get out and give a lecture. So the idea 9 years ago was, let's have a conference to let them get their feet wet. We said that, then we ended up having 400 people there. I said, we're not getting their feet wet, we're throwing them into the deep end of the pool. But I'm always right there with them so they can get used to speaking in front of large groups of people. And so every year, we always bring in our new authors that we've published during the last year. But also, we bring in, headline people, big people in the metaphysical field to be our keynote speakers. And this year, our keynote speaker is Robert Babal. Some of you may know him. He's on the Ancient Astronaut shows a lot, and he is from Spain. We're bringing him over from Spain. That's where he lives. And he does a lot of research in the pyramids in Egypt and all over the world, in the ancient sites and the mysteries. And so he's written many books. The most famous one, I think, was he's known for is the Orion Mystery. And so he's always looking into the mysterious and the strange, just like I am. So he's going to be giving two talks on two separate days, mostly focused on his books and the information he has found of lost mysteries and things that have happened all over the world. It's Robert Bival. He's our main one. We're also bringing Blair Styra over again. Many of you may remember him. He is the most famous psychic channeler in New Zealand. He's very well known there, and he's very, very accurate. He channels the entity known as Tabash, and he's very well known in New Zealand. When I went to New Zealand years ago for the first time, we had conferences and talks together, more lectures than conferences. We would have joint lectures together, but he was introducing me to New Zealand. He's got a huge following over there. So it was, I don't know how many years ago it was now, I brought him to America to introduce him to America. And we did a traveling lecture tour all over the United States. And he's a remarkable young man. And when he is doing his channeling in front of the audience, he walks around in the audience and speaks to people. Rather, he doesn't, but this entity does that speaks through him to Bosch and gives personal messages to the people in the audience. So it's really very interesting to watch Blair work. So he's going to be there. And then we have Guy Needler, who has been coming back now for several years from England. And we have now published four of his books. He's written the books on the history of God and the Beyond the Source. There's two books in that series. And we've just received a new manuscript from him that I haven't had a chance to read yet. And that's about the origin of God. So he's even going beyond everything else he found to find that. I always tell him, I don't know how your brain can hold up with this because the information is so deep and so complicated. I see you said people like my convoluted universe theories. He goes beyond that into things that I haven't discovered yet. So that's really interesting. Last year at the Transformation Conference, I talked about some of the information I've been getting. It was in Convoluted Universe Book 4 about the backdrop people, the ones that aren't real. And I had Guy come up on the stage and talk with me, because in his work, he has found what he calls the backfill people, which it turned out is the same thing. It's just another title, another name for it. These are the backfill people, mine are the backdrop people. So we had an interesting back and forth conversation about what I was told they were and what he had been told they were. And for those that don't know, this is in Convoluted Universe Book 4. And it was totally new information. And now I'm getting even more information on it to put into Convoluted Book 5. Because every time I get a concept that is strange and unusual, they will always give me more information down the road. It will come through somebody else. So I'm getting more information now about the backdrop people. For those who don't know what it is, I'll just briefly go over it because I don't really understand it all myself. It's way, way too complex. Now, I'm going to get a drink. This is that, as everybody knows, everything is energy. And that a lot of the people, especially in crowded places, are not real. They are just energy. And he calls them the backdrop people because they take up the spaces. Just like you do whenever you're putting on a movie. You put people in there as extras to just fill the background. And they don't really have a part in the movie at all. They're just there for atmosphere. And I was told that's because human beings don't want to go through a life all by themselves. They'd be lonely. So they like to have people around them. So we create this, these backdrop people that are just there. And they fill up the background. But they're not real. They have no souls. And they just, they don't even live, really. They're not born and they do not die. And that's what's very hard to understand. When I got that concept, I was thinking, oh, wait a minute here. But it makes sense when you think about it. And I was told in my work, it's just a hologram. That's why they aren't all real. And I keep thinking, well, some of them have to be. Just like people in a movie play bit parts, but the majority of them are just people taking up the background. And they aren't real people. And so every time now when I'm in a crowded airport, you're bumper-to-bumper people everywhere. The places are so crowded. And I'll tell Julia, boy, we've got an awful lot of backdrop people here this time because the majority of them are not real people. It's a hologram that we have created to live out our reality. You can see my convoluted universe books are getting more and more complicated than they have been before. Each book gets a little more complicated as it goes along. So Guy Needler was getting up the same information, the backfill people, from his sources. So it's amazing that we both come up with the same concept at the same time. And people are always asking me lots of questions about it. The same way they ask questions about the New Earth. We get tons of those at every conference we go to and every lecture I give and class. But now they're beginning to want to know about the backdrop people. At this last talk I gave, this one Englishman came up to me, and at first I couldn't figure out what in the world he was trying to ask me. But he said, well, then that means that 9/11 didn't really happen. And I said, well, what do you mean? He said, it wasn't real. It didn't happen. I said, well, of course it happened, because I was caught in the middle of it. I was doing a lecture tour in North Carolina when it happened, and we were caught up in trying to get home because, you know, all the airlines were stopped. The ones coming from overseas were turned around and sent back, and we had a rental car. And we got to the airport to turn it in and get our plane, and they said, no plane's taken off. And we said, well, my daughter said, I've got the key here. Let's just keep going. So they said, if you turn that key, that car in, you're not going to get it back because we can't get any cars out. There were no buses running, nothing. So we just kept the key, and we just drove all the way back to Arkansas. So I said, I know it was a real event because I was in the middle of it. And this man, finally, I figured out what he was trying to ask me. He said, no, weren't they all just backdrop people that were killed when the towers collapsed? And I said, no, that's two different things altogether. He has mixed that up. Because the backdrop people aren't born and they don't die. They're just energy. Where the ones that die in a mass catastrophe like that have agreed to go out together. They come in together and they go out together as an agreement. So see, there's a difference there. I think I've got a caller. Hello, is somebody there?
Yes, good Hello. Evening, Dolores. How are you?
Fine, I guess. I said I'm sitting here all lonely in this room. I miss Julia being with me. You have a question?
Yes, well, we miss Julia, too, and I agree with you. She adds a lot to the show. Dolores, my name is Jeff. I'm calling from Perth, Australia.
Oh, okay. We know we were just over there a few months ago, but we weren't in Perth this time. We were only in Sydney. Uh-huh. Go ahead.
Yeah.
I'm very familiar with Perth.
Yeah, look, I really... Yeah, and I'd love you to come back here at some stage.
For years, I was going to Perth every year, except this last year. What's your question?
Okay, sure. I just a couple of questions. Look, I'll start with the easy one. The movie 701, do you have any idea when that might be released?
When people have an accent, I have to adjust to the accent and pardon me to really understand. Take it slower. What was the question?
The movie
It's my problem. I always have trouble with that. Go ahead.
Sorry.
Just say it slower.
The movie 701.
Oh,
701,
yeah.
701, the movie. When will that be released?
It's just about finished now, because he's a friend of mine, as was Tony Cataldo, is the one that's making that movie, and he was at the UFO conference, and they're just finishing it up now. He's hoping to have it out this year, so it's a regular movie. It's a full-length movie. It has a storyline with it, too. I was filmed for that movie, too, so he said, I'm in it somewhere. But we think it'll be out this year.
Okay, well, I'll look forward to that.
Okay.
The other questions I have, with regards to the shift that you refer to in your convoluted series and also the three waves of volunteers.
Yeah.
Have you had any indication of when the shift will be completed?
We're in the middle of it. It's already happened. That's what people don't understand.
Yeah, sure. I understand we're in the process of it, but at the point where it is completed, I imagine we would be able to assess which side of the shift of the divide that we are on.
Of the shift of what?
Whether we've gone actually made the shift or whether we have stayed behind.
They said you will see. It's not going to be a big bam, we're there. It's not going to be a sudden event. It's a very slow event that you have to adjust to slowly. It happens gradually. And it began about 2003. By 2012, it reached an accumulation of energy that has pushed us into the new other dimension. But it's just that you don't notice it because you're in the middle of it. But even when I was in China, before I came to Australia, I was in China, they said, we know something happened. We feel it. There's definitely an energy, and we know something happened. But it's not going to be something dramatic that happens all of a sudden. It's been a very gradual thing. And the body is adjusting to it. Because the body has to change also to go match the frequency that the Earth is going into, there's a dimension.
Yeah.
But it's
and,
slow.
And do you think this transition will be completed by, say, 2016 or 2018?
There's no date set at all. It's whenever... Everybody is not going to go at the same time. It's how their vibration and frequency has to change to match that of the Earth. So some will go sooner than others, but they're not going to be able to tell the difference because there won't be anything that you'll notice. It'll just be slow and gradual. So they said, don't even try to put a time on it. That's just like, you remember they said that 2012 was going to be the end of the world, and nothing happened. But it was definitely a shift in energy. And if you're paying attention, every once in a while, I think you'll notice there is a big shift in energy. It occurs. I can feel it when it happens, because the Earth is doing it in jerks and jumps, if that's a good way to put it. And I can tell it because sometimes it makes you dizzy. And I say, something just happened. But, no, you're not supposed to worry about it. You're just supposed to live your life the best way you can and just adjust to it as it happens. But there are going to be a lot.
Well, certainly 2014 has been a very eventful year globally, I think. And we've seen a lot of changes this year.
Well, there's been changes anyway. And I said, look at how many people keep saying the world's going to end and everything's going to end. Over here, they were talking about, you know, the eclipse we just had. There's supposed to be four of those this year, a total eclipse. And one man wrote a book, and it said, this is fulfilling the Bible prophecy. This is the end of the world. And I said, that book isn't going to have a very long life, because it's not the end of the world. These are all just adjustments as they go. But if you notice, you know, we're having all of these disasters, and a lot of it has to do with water, because I was told the water is cleansing. And that's what they're trying to do, clean out a lot of the stuff, the bad, I won't say bad, the negative things that we've been doing to the Earth, is trying to cleanse itself. So that's a lot of it is happening in that way, the changes are. I'm trying to think, how should I word that? But what I've found in these disasters, there's going to be more and more people dying. You know, we've had thousands of people die in tsunamis and earthquakes and the floods and the fires, because more people are leaving the planet. Those who can't adjust to the changing of the frequencies will just leave, because their bodies can't handle it. And they can't adjust to it. Now, the people who are into negativity, they're the ones that can't adjust. They're going to have a hard time adjusting, because they're not going to go to the new Earth, because some of them don't even want to. They want to stay with the old Earth. They like the drama. They like the things that are happening. So they will stay with the old Earth. And so they aren't going to go, but the other ones are already moving. But they said you're not going to notice any difference. Your life will continue. Some people wanted to know, should they sell their house? You're going to take your house with you. And they said, do I have to die to go there? No, you will just continue to live. You take your body with you. After you're older there in the new Earth for a long time, then you'll really begin to notice, because eventually our body will turn into light bodies. And they also said that we'll get to the point that we are switching our diets to liquid diets. And when I'm doing a lecture, a lot of people said, oh yeah, I've done that. Eventually, after we're over on the new Earth for a long time, we'll get to where we won't eat anything. So those are things you will notice, but otherwise, you'll just notice things are getting better. And my daughter, when we do this lecture together, she's always saying, people say, yes, but I see all these terrible things happening all around me, then that means I'm still in the old Earth, doesn't it? No, that's not what it means.
Yes.
You know, before television and newspapers and everything, you wouldn't even know about these things happening all over the world. But we know now, because we have the news. But we tell people, is that disastrous event, is that happening in your world? And it's not, is it?
No.
It's happening, but it's not in your life, in your world. Now, at any time, you could make it a part of your world if you focus on it, or if you want to go there and help or something, you can make it a part of your world. But otherwise, it's just something you know about, and it's not really in your life. But those are the ones who are, some of them are leaving because they want to get out. But they said eventually, more and more will be leaving. Some will be switching to the new Earth. Then the old Earth will gradually have more and more people leaving. And they won't be allowed, the ones that are into negativity, the ones who don't care if they're into the drama, they don't care if they go or not. Eventually, when they die, and make the transition, as they say, they won't come back to Earth, because Earth will have evolved to a place where there won't be any negativity. And there's no karma, so they can't come back here. And they're going to be sent to another planet that is being prepared, that where they can go and repay their karma, because you don't get out of karma. And they said eventually, it's going to take a long time, but eventually everyone will have gone one way or the other. Either the new Earth or to leave, they die and go to the other planet. Then eventually there will be nobody left on Earth at all. So I think that's going to be quite a while before it does all of that. But they said when that happens and all the people have left the old Earth, it will allow it to sit there and recover. And this will take it quite a while to recover and be cleansed before it'll be reseeded again with another group of people. And hopefully they'll do better. But it'll be two separate things altogether. I know that's kind of complex, but can you understand what I'm saying?
Yes.
It's pretty complex. I'm trying to make it
simple. It's very abstract, unfortunately. But
I know. That's why when they give me this stuff, I say, make it simple. I got to explain it to people.
Yes, you do a good job there.
I try.
So this could actually take generations.
Oh, yes. But then they said age is not going to mean anything anymore. You will live as long as you want to. And you'll be healthy. There won't be any disease. It's going to be wonderful. And we're in the middle of it now.
Yeah.
But we can't complain. But just be aware and notice. I think you'll see very subtle changes that are happening. And your job is to try to spread joy and happiness to everyone you meet. And this is the energy that will accumulate, and it will eventually prevail.
I'm certainly pass that on.
Uh-huh.
The last question I have, and I'll leave you with this one, is the issue
you're on the other side of the world, so this must be pretty late. Yeah, go ahead. What's another question?
The concept of walk-ins, and I'm trying to understand from your convoluted universe, book 3, and also in book 2, there's a reference to walk-ins, and the difference between the conscious mind and the subconscious mind, and because they seem to be two separate things, in that a soul can move out of a body and be replaced by another soul, yet the conscious mind doesn't seem to doesn't seem to be a different person. I'm just wondering if you could explain that a little.
I'm trying to think what part you're talking about, because I forget as soon as I write the books. I forget what's in there. Have you read The Three Waves of Volunteers?
Yes.
Because that has a whole lot about the New Earth in that. But this one I think you're talking about is whenever, like a walk-in, is that what you're talking about?
Correct.
When another soul comes in.
Yes, but the conscious mind, from what I've read, the conscious mind does not seem to know any different. It might feel different.
No.
But the memories are still there, and for all intents and purposes, the conscious mind thinks it's the same person. Would that
yes.
be correct?
I've written about that also in my book, Between Death and Life. That tells what happens when you die and where you go. I have a lot in there about walk-ins, too. But, you know, it's not a possession. It's not taking over by anything. The person just gets to the point in their life where they just can't take it anymore. They've taken too much on when they came into a life. They put too much on their plate, and they want out. Well, you know you can't get out by committing suicide. That's not the answer, because you got to come back and do it again anyway. And the body needs to go on because it has made commitments, it's made contracts. So what the person does on a soul level, it's never on a conscious level, they decide they want out. They make an agreement with another soul. And it's usually a soul that they've known for a long time in other lives, and they're very close to each other. And they make an agreement, okay, will you come in and take over my responsibilities so I can go and rest? And that's what happens. The new soul comes in. But it usually will make the exchange when the person is very ill, or they've almost died, they're unconscious. They never really know when it happens. I've spoken at a lot of walk-in conferences, and they'll come up and say, oh, I've walked in 5 or 6 times. And I said, that's not the way it happened, because they never remember it when it happens. Now, they do in my sessions, because that's the other part. But all they know is they feel differently. They no longer have that depressed feeling of want to get out of this life, I don't want to be here. That goes away. They don't have that feeling anymore. And things begin to look better. Their life begins to change. Now, when a new soul comes in, it must agree to take on all the responsibilities of the one that's leaving. All the contracts that soul made with other people, all the karma that was to be replaced, the new soul agrees to take that on. So it has to take care of all of that before it can go on and do what it wants to do. So that's why the exchange usually happens when the person is unconscious or very ill, so that the incoming soul can absorb the memories and know all about the person before it begins to take on and complete the life. But the people around them, all they know is they seem to be more mature. They seem to have changed. But that could just be because they're growing up. They're finally adjusting. But the person themselves do not remember when the exchange takes place. All done on the soul level. So people say, I'm a walk-in, and I said, I don't think so. Did you almost die? No. So I don't think so. So there's just so many people that want to be these things, and they don't realize how this works. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, it does to a degree. I'm really trying to understand the concept of you know, when I am awake and living my life, that's my yeah. conscious mind that is active.
It's what I call the stupidest part of the human being is the conscious mind. I call it Mr. Stupid because my daughter doesn't like me to use that word. But I call it that because the conscious mind thinks it knows everything, wants to control everything, but it doesn't know anything. That's why I say it's the stupidest part of the human being. The other part is the one that has all the information. And when the conscious person is awake, that's all they know. They don't even know about these other parts of themselves. You don't know that you're actually living many lives at the same time, simultaneously. And there's a lot of things happening because you couldn't handle it. You focus on this life, and that's all you can do because the mind can't handle it. That's why I call those books for people who want their minds bent like pretzels. They really make you think, and they make you think in a way that you never would have before.
Yeah, well, I thought I was doing okay right up until I read that part. Dolores, thank you very much for your time. I wish you all the best and look forward to Julia coming back as well.
I won't be back to Australia this year because I've got the whole year is already planned out. So whenever I get over there, it'll be on our website anyway. But it must be the middle of the night there. I don't know what the hours are, but I thank you for calling for such a long way.
It's actually nearly 9 a.m. in the morning here.
Oh, it's the other direction. Because here, it's night now. And I never know when I go to Australia. Is it today, tomorrow, or yesterday, or what? I said it's a perfect example of time not existing. Because you don't know where you are when you're traveling all over the world. Okay. Well, maybe I'll get back there, but I don't have any plans this year anyway. Okay.
Well, look, when you do, I'll absolutely make time for you.
Okay. Well, thank you for calling.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Let's see. I think I got to the part. Let me tell you about the conference, the date, so you'll know that if you're interested in coming to the Transformation Conference. It is June the 20th to the 22nd. It's 3 days. June 20th to the 22nd. And it's going to be at the Holiday Inn Convention Center in Springdale, Arkansas. That's right over here. It's next door to us. And I know at the when we did the UFO conference, there were so many people, we had to assign seats because we absolutely ran out of room. There won't be that problem at this venue because in Springdale, this is a huge convention center, and there'll be plenty of room for anybody who comes. We're not going to run out of any seats for that one. But they're going to have a lot of speakers, and the price for the, the price includes a three-course lunch. That is free. That is included in the price when you sign up. So I think it's a pretty good deal. For all 3 days, we provide a three-course lunch. And the price for the 3 days is $175. And if you just want to come from one day, it could be broken down for that. Now, we're going to begin sending out the flyers about this conference. You'll have the publicity. Everybody who's on our mailing list and our email list will get all the information about the conference. And if you're not on our mailing list, you could call and want information, or you can check out the website, because we've got a whole a site dedicated to this, and it has all the information on that about all the speakers and what's going to happen. June the 20th to the 22nd at the Holiday Inn Convention Center in Springdale, Arkansas. So I don't have much rest. I go from one conference to the next. So we're focusing on that one right now. And when Julie's still working when she's over there in England, because she's doing it by computer. So we're working back and forth. I'm trying to think, there were some other things I wanted to tell about, but I didn't want to get into them too deep because I don't have a lot of time left. But when I spoke the last time, we were talking about dimensions. And these are not the big dimensions, the ones that the planet is moving in and out of for the new Earth. We were talking about the small dimensions, the little dimensions that are around you constantly, that you're moving in and out of all the time, and you don't even realize it. And I think in the last talk, we talked about all the strange things that people have experienced when they go in and out of these dimensions. And they won't even know what happens. It happens so unexpectedly. The only way you know you have shifted to another dimension is that something is different. Something will be out of place. Something will change. Well, the reason I brought it up again, because I didn't get to finish the talk about dimensions, because the ETs use dimensions to travel. And this is what people are always asking me, how do they travel? Now, we had a speaker at the UFO conference was talking about, oh, we're never going to be able to get to another planet because you've got to go so many years to get out there. But that's not the way it happens. They're focusing on the fuel-driven, a combustion-type engine, where you have to have fuel to propel you from one place to the other. Sure, you do something like that, it's going to take years to go from one star to the next. But that's not the way the ETs travel. They mostly travel by thought. They said they can use the group mind on the spacecraft, propels the craft with the energy of their mind. The smaller craft, only one of them can do it. They can propel the smaller craft. On the larger craft, it's a whole group. And the energy that they project is stored in crystals on board the craft to charge the craft, to keep it so it can go. Now, they said when they're traveling in space, there are rivers of energy. They call it cosmic energy. There's rivers of energy throughout space. All they have to do is to hook into one of these rivers of energy and just go with the flow. They don't have to use any type of fuel or other energy at all. It just propels them very quickly to where they have to go. Of course, there's black holes also. But they said they just hook into a river of energy and go with it. But also, they change vibration and frequencies, and that's how they go from one place to the other. Very much like when you watch Star Trek, and they'll just say, energize, and they're there. If you ever have seen UFOs in the sky, if you see one, you're watching a UFO in the night sky, and all of a sudden it will just blink out and disappear. Or all of a sudden one will just blink in, and there it was. There wasn't anything there before. This means they have gone in and out of dimensions, and they do it by raising and lowering the vibrations of the craft. When they raise the vibrations of the craft, they go into the next dimension. When they lower the vibrations, then they come into our dimension. We are the densest, the heaviest, the slowest vibration of any planet in the universe. They said they don't really like to come here because it's very difficult on their bodies because the energy is so heavy. but they have to lower that to come into our density. And that's why all of a sudden they will just appear. They also use portals to go back and forth, but it is also done with the vibrations and frequencies to change from one dimension to the other. This could go, I could explain this, I was going to go on more with it. Maybe next week I go into it in more detail because there's a whole lot more about it that I do want to bring up. But the craft itself has an energy field around it that they use for propulsion. And if you know, if you do enough work with UFO studies, you will find you will never see a craft, a UFO sitting on the ground. It will either be hovering or it will put down legs, but it will never touch the ground. This is because it is surrounded with this energy field, and it would short it out if it came in contact with the Earth. And the ones who have crashed, and, you know, Roswell was not the only one. I spoke at Roswell, and they talk about that one crashed. There are many others, and I've investigated some of them. There were many other parts of the United States that crashed, and they had bodies that were retrieved from the craft. But in my work, when I asked the questions, they said, if you'll notice, each time something like that happened, there was a thunderstorm. The one in Roswell, there was a terrible thunderstorm that night. And the other ones I investigated was also thunderstorms. So that shorts out the electrical field that is around the craft. It's always a smaller craft because the large craft can't come into our density. The small craft is the ones that come down. And they always have the little beings on them because the little grays are like robotic beings. They're biologically created to handle the density of the Earth. And they're the ones that are sent here because they're the ones that can handle this. And they always come on the smaller craft. But they will never touch the ground. They will hover or they will put legs down. And I've seen pictures and cases where you can see the markings where the legs are on, you can see where they've landed. They touch the ground. But when they have crashed, they said, we have very good pilots. It usually doesn't happen. But it's because the thunderstorm shorted out the electrical field that was around the craft. So there's a lot more to this. Maybe next week, I'm not sure what I'm going to do next week. I never know until I get on the air what I'm going to talk about sometimes, unless we have a guest, and it's definite. Maybe I can finish this, because there's a whole lot more I need to bring up about how the UFOs propel themselves, the type of energy they use, and how they take people back and forth, too, because that's all very interesting. So if we have time next week, if nothing else comes up, I'll focus on these dimensions again and how the UFOs use them to travel back and forth. So don't let anyone tell you, oh, we don't have the fuel to go to that nearest star. It would take years. They're really into the old way of thinking. It has nothing to do with fuel. It's all energy. And shifting into the vibrations and frequencies and raising and lowering them. That's all it is. So next week, I think I'll continue on the same subject, if nothing else comes up in the meantime. But anyway, remember the dates, June 20th to 22nd. We're going to be having the Transformation Conference. Robert Babal is coming from Spain. There's a lot of mysteries that he's discovered in that part of the world, archaeological mysteries. And then Blair Syra, who is the most famous psychic channeler in New Zealand. Now, people last year, when I got into some of these things, they said they wished that I had had time for them to ask more questions. Some of them said they had enough questions, I could have gone another hour. So I thought for my talk at the Transformation Conference, I'm going to have like an open mic and let anybody ask anything they want to ask. And we'll see how that goes. Okay, we're coming to the top of the hour now, and it's time for me to sign off. But I want to thank everybody for listening tonight, and have a nice May. We're into May already. But have a nice time, nice evening, and I'll be back again next week live. So good night, everyone.